You're listening to a WebYeshiva.org podcast. Visit www.webyeshiva.org to take part in our fully interactive online yeshiva. Visit blog.webyeshiva.org for more free downloadable Torah content.
Hello, this is Ilana Goldstein-Sachs of Web Yeshiva with this week's TFSR podcast. Welcome back to the study of the Book of Amos. This is our second installment in the Amos series within our broader TFSR series. Last week, I gave an introduction to the Book of Amos, and we discussed a little bit about Amos, the prophet from Tekoa, right? Tekoa, which most people think it's the Tekoa, which many of us are familiar with, which is in the Shevet of Yehuda. But Amos, we said, was specifically prophesying not to the kingdom of Yehuda, but rather to the northern kingdom, to the kingdom of Yisrael. And then he prophesied during the time period of Yeravam ben Yoash, Yeravam II. And we saw last time how during Yeravam's time, it was a very prosperous and successful time for Israel. Yeravam conquered widely. The borders were bigger than they had been since the time of Shlomo HaMelech. And everything is going very, very well for Israel in the northern kingdom. We ended last time with the sad note that it is perhaps predictable that when everything is going well for Israel, that's when they start doing wrong things. And that's exactly what we see through the Book of Amos, right? And it's against that backdrop that we have to understand the Book of Amos. Today I'd like to start finally digging into the prophecies themselves of Amos. We are not going to start with the first prophecy, right? We saw the first few psukim last time from the beginning of Perek Aleph. But for now, I would like to jump to the middle of Perek He. Now, to justify starting what seems to be in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of a book, right, you have to understand that the books of Nevi'im, right, the books of prophecy, were compilations, basically, of different prophecies said by this one prophet, in our case, Amos, and then were put together in a book. Now, there was a reason that the prophecies were put in the order they were put, but nevertheless, it must be understood that they're not meant to be seen as one long prophecy starting with the first pasuk of the first parak and ending at the end. They are individual prophecies all along the way, and I want to start with Parak Hei Pasuk Yudchet, because this is a good way of continuing the introduction which I began last time, to give us a sense of who Amos's audience was, right? Who were the people he was dealing with? What were the issues of his time that he was dealing with? This comes out very, very clearly in this prophecy in the middle of Perek He. The first word of the prophecy perhaps says it all. Hoy. And hoy can be roughly translated as oy. Right? Oy vavoy. Now, what is this hoy? Now, we will see as we learn through the various nivuot of the book, that this isn't the only prophecy that begins with hoy. There's a whole series of hoys. Let's see what he's hoying about here. What's the problem? Hoy hamitavim et yom Hashem. Lama ze lachem yom Hashem? Hu choshech velo or. Right? Hoy hamitavim et yom Hashem. Oy vavoy. To those people who are yearning for the day of God, Yom Hashem. Now, first of all, we have to understand what this is. It sounds positive, right? If you think that the people are yearning for Yom Hashem, the day of God, that sounds like a good thing. So why is this a problem? So in order to understand, and we'll see obviously more as the prophecy continues, we have to understand, first of all, what this concept of Yom Hashem is. Yom Hashem is a description of the day, one day in the future, when Hashem will judge the world, or a certain nation, depending on which description is being looked at. Right, basically the final judgment, the judgment in the end of days, when finally, justice will be given, will be meted out both for the good and for the bad of the world, as opposed to the existence that we all live in day to day, where it doesn't always seem like the people who deserve it receive reward and the people who don't receive punishment. In that day, in Yom Hashem, one day in the future, this will finally happen. There are a number of famous examples of this, right? This isn't the only time in Tanakh at all where Yom Hashem is mentioned. There are a number of examples of this in Tanakh. I'll give you a few examples, more famous ones, so that you have an idea of what exactly I'm talking about. So one famous example of this is what is described at the end of the book of Malachi, which is the Haftarah that we read on Shabbat HaGadol, meaning Shabbat before Pesach. And in that parak, Malachi is describing what I mentioned just now, one day when Hashem is going to finally judge the peoples of the world. And he describes how he's going to find all of those who are doing the wrong things, the sorcerers and those who swear falsely, etc., etc., a whole list of people he's going to seek out. The main description I want to look at now is in Perek Gimel Pasuk Yutet in Malachi, Ki hine hayom ba bo'er ketanur, the day is coming, burning like a furnace. V'hayu chol zedim v'chol osei risha kash v'lihat otam. Hayom haba amar Hashem Tzvaot, asher lo yazov otam, shoresh v'anaf. Right? This day is coming burning like a furnace, right? And all those evil people are going to, go up in smoke, basically. Pasuk Chaf, however, v'zarcha lachem yirei shemi, shemesh staka umarpe, v'zarcha lahem yirei shemi, shemesh tzedaka umarpe b'chnafeh. Right? For those who are yirei shemi, those who fear me, the God-fearing ones, I will shine upon them. Right? Instead of burning them, I will shine upon them. so we see here how the same thing, let's call it a fire, will burn those who are bad, and will warm or shine upon those people who are good. Right, giving punishment or reward as fits the behavior of the various people. So that's one example in the book of Malachi. Another example is in Perek Yudalit of the book of Zechariah. And there, Zechariah describes this earthquake that will be in the end of days. And there too, there's a similar description of those people who have done bad. Right, they will be punished in this major upheaval that is going to occur. Whereas the people who were good, they will come under the protection of Hashem. Right, that section, Zechariah Yudalid, by the way, is what we read on the holiday of Sukkot, the Haftarah for the holiday of Sukkot on Shabbat. Sorry, not on Shabbat, on the first day of the holiday of Sukkot. The truth is that probably the most famous example of Yom Hashem, or a Yom, which is certainly described in very similar terms and is clearly meant to be the same type of experience, that would be Makat Bechorot, right? Something which isn't going to happen in the future, but something which already happened in history, right? Where there also we have this major day of reckoning, where Hashem is finally going to give the final blow to the evildoers, the Mitzrim, right? And how does he do that? Right, in the way that we saw similar description in Malachi, which, by the way, is not coincidental that that's the parak that we read on the day that we commemorate Makat Bechorot, meaning Shabbat HaGadol, because that's what Shabbat HaGadol is all about. Where in Makat Bechorot also you have, the Bnei Israel had to put the blood on their doorpost, and that was the sign that they were, following Hashem, basically. And then Hashem passes over, and he, once again, kills the bad guys and saves the good guys, right? So these are all similar descriptions of the same type of thing, right, which Amos refers to as Yom Hashem. So when Amos says to the people, right, Hoy lachem hamitavim leYom Hashem, right, oi, to those people who are yearning for the day of God, right? What is he getting at? Right? What is he saying? The point is, what do they think Yom Hashem is? Right? Why would that be something that they are yearning for? Right? Because they probably have this mistaken idea, which is almost an understandable idea that what is Yom Hashem? Yom Hashem is the day when Hashem saves Am Yisrael and punishes all of Am Yisrael's enemies. And truth is that that's a theme that shows up in a lot of these descriptions that I showed you, right? In Makat B'charot, in Zechariah, right, that is what is happening. That in those cases, the good guys and the bad guys follow along the divide of Am Yisrael versus the Amim. Right? There are other examples of this as well, right, which I didn't give you. And that's what they think. And this is an idea that caused more than just about anything else for Bnei Yisrael to stray from the proper path during this time period of Bayit Rishon, that they had this mistaken idea that they are always the good guys, that by definition Am Yisrael is the good guys. Right? You see that in the famous prophecy of Yirmiyahu in Perek Zayin, where Yirmiyahu is standing in front of the Beit HaMikdash, and he says, don't listen to those false prophets, those Nevi'ei Sheker, who are telling you, Hechal Hashem, Hechal Hashem, Hechal Hashem Hema. What is Hechal Hashem, Hechal Hashem, Hechal Hashem Hema? These false prophets were saying, but it's the temple of Hashem, it's Hashem's Mikdash, it's his Hechal. Why would Hashem destroy his own Hechal? Don't listen to those doomsayers, those Nevi'im who are telling you that you have to act differently, lest Hashem destroy his Beit HaMikdash. He would never do that. It's his own Hechal. Why would he do that? And this was based on this mistaken idea that if you have the Mikdash of Hashem in your midst, then that means that Hashem is always with you, regardless of how you behave. And Amos and many of the other Nevi'im say, no, that's incorrect. Hashem stays in his Mikdash only if you merit it. Right? It's no guarantee. Having a building there, which you call God's house, is no guarantee that Hashem is going to decide to live there. And so this was this mistaken idea, which we are seeing hints to here as well, that the people thought that by definition they are the good guys. They're the ones who's on whose side one will always find Hashem. And so Amos says to them, "Hoy hamitzavim et yom Hashem, lama ze lo lachem yom Hashem, hu choshech velo or." Right? Why would you want Yom Hashem? He's saying to them, for you, it's going to be darkness. It's not going to be light. Meaning that if you continue behaving the way that you're behaving, when it comes to the good guys, bad guys divide, you're going to be on the wrong side, right? and you are going to be punished. And then he goes on to describe the degree to which this is inevitable. The degree to which this punishment is going to find them eventually, despite their very prosperous and positive existence that they're living in now, right? Pasuk Yutet, Ka'asher Yanus Ish Mipnei Ha'ari. Right? It's like, Amos says, someone who's running away from a lion. Ufiga Ohadov. Right? And as he's running, looking over his shoulder, running away from the lion, he bumps smack into a bear. Right? It's something a little cartoon-like about this. Right? And he jumps back from the bear. Uva Habayit V'Samach Yado Alakir U'Nishacho Hanachash. And he runs home, and perhaps in his exhaustion or relief, he leans against the wall. The snake bites him. Right? It's inevitable. It's going to get you in the end. Right? In a very out of the frying pan into the fire sort of way. It's just going to get worse and worse and worse. And there is no escaping this Yom Hashem, which is actually going to be very, very bad for you. Right? Choshech v'lo or. And this description of the lion and the bear and the snake also is meant to drive another point home, right? Don't be fooled by momentary success, Amos is saying, right? You are feeling really good right now, right? You are in a very secure, very prosperous time in the existence of Am Yisrael's history, right? But don't be fooled by momentary success because it's an illusion, right? You've escaped the lion and you think, aha, I've done it, right? You're about to run straight into the bear. You've escaped the bear, there's going to be a snake waiting for you. So this perhaps refers back to some degree to that prophecy of Yonah ben Amittai, which we've already seen twice in our various podcasts, where it says there very clearly, right, that the reason why Yeravam and Yoash and Bnei Israel of his time were so successful and so prosperous is because Hashem had compassion for Am Yisrael and simply did not want to punish them at this point. But it wasn't because they deserved it, right? Don't be fooled, Amos is saying. Nothing that you have right now is going to last. It's just a temporary blip in what is inevitably going to lead to your ultimate punishment. And Amos goes on, Pasuk Kaf Aleph, Saneti ma'asti chagichem, velo ariach ba'atzrotichem. I hate, I despise your chagim. Referring here not to the holidays themselves so much, but the worship that you do on your holidays, the korbanot that you, the sacrifices that you would bring on your holidays. Velo ariach ba'atzrotichem, and I will not smell, right? I will not take in the korbanot of your atzarot, right? The those days which are called atzeret, right? Another name for some of the holidays. Ki im ta'aluli olot uminchotechem lo erze v'shelem miriechem lo abit, right? Over and over again, he's saying the same thing. If you bring me an olah or a mincha, I do not want them, right? All of the various korbanot, the shelem miriechem lo abit, I'm not going to even look at it. Haser me'alai hamon shirecha. Remove from me, right, your songs, right, that your songs that you sing as part of the worship, part of the ceremonies. V'zimrat nevalecha lo ashma, right, and the music of your instruments, I am not going to listen to them. And if you do this, if you remove all of these things, if you stop doing them, v'yigal kamayim mishpat utztaka kenachaletan, then and only then will justice flow like water, and righteousness like a strong river. So let's go back and look at this for a minute, right? The extent of Hashem's rejection of Am Yisrael and their behavior at this point. There are seven terms, no less than seven terms of rejection. Saneti, ma'asti, lo ariach, lo etze, lo abit, haser me'alai, lo eshma. Right? Seven times in seven different ways, Hashem says, away, I'm not interested, ugh, I don't want you. Right? With all of the senses, right? I will not smell, I will not look, right? In all the different ways, Hashem says that he is simply not interested in their korbanot. Now, what is going on here? This is a famous, you might be familiar with it, it's a famous question about not only Amos, it comes up in other Nevi'im as well, for example, Yeshayahu. Is Amos against Korbanot? Right? Is this an anti-Korbanot speech that we're hearing here? And the answer is no, of course, he's not against the Korbanot per se. However, it is clear that somehow the korbanot are causing corruption, right? If you get rid of all of these things, Hashem says, then there will be mishpat and tzedakah. And not only mishpat and tzedakah, but mishpat and tzedakah, which will flow like a roaring river. What's this imagery of a river? Of course, water, life-giving, right? If you remember the introduction of Amos, the second pasuk, where we saw his general introduction, that the word of Hashem will come out like the roar of a lion and will dry up the fields, right? So this is the water, right, that will revive those dried up fields. But a society must be watered by justice and by righteousness if it's going to survive. So it's clear that these korbanot somehow are what are preventing the mishpat and tzedakah, the justice and the righteousness from flowing. No, how is that exactly? Because the korbanot really are nothing but a disgusting, empty scam if they go side by side, right, hand in hand with corruption. What was going on? Right, B'nai Israel were doing whatever they wanted, right? And this is, again, a theme that we see in many places. Again, in that Yirmiyahu Perek Yud Zayin, in many places in Yeshayahu, not entirely, Yirmiyahu Perek Zayin, and many places in Yeshayahu, many other places as well. How were the korbanot being used, right? The B'nai Israel would do whatever they would want. They would oppress people. They would do all sorts of awful things. And then they would turn around and they would bring a korban, right? And they would say, okay, now everything is okay. God is back on my side. It's similar to this mistaken concept of the Beit HaMikdash. If you have Mikdash, everything is fine. If you bring a Korban, everything is fine, right? And this just breeds corruption, right? Because if you think that you could do whatever you want and then just bring a Korban and magically you're forgiven, that is going to cause corruption. And so Amos is saying that these korbanot are not going to work as a protection against Yom Hashem that is coming your way, right? Because it is the korbanot themselves and how they are being used and how they are causing you to become more and more corrupt that is bringing the punishment against you in the first place. In the last little bit of this prophecy, Amos brings three things, and the question is how to understand them. If they are meant to be understood separately, or if they are meant to be understood all together as one continuous idea. First, let's read these last three psukim and understand them one by one, and then how we can understand them all together. Hazivachim u'mincha higashtem li b'midbar 40 shana 40 shana Beit Yisrael. Right, in order to express the degree to which the korbanot are not the ikar, right, of what Bnei Israel have to do, right, Amos says, Hazvachim mincha higashtem li b'midbar. Did you even, for those 40 years you were in the desert, did you even bring me korbanot? Right, and we know that at least to some degree, there was the korbanot were not brought in the midbar the same way they were later on when they were settled in Eretz Yisrael. Right, so clearly the Amos is saying the korbanot are not the ikar. Right, so don't make them the ikar. Right, the ikar are other things which you are ignoring. Right, so concentrate on those, and not the korbanot. Unesatem et sikut malkechem ve'et kivun salmechem kochav Elohechem asher asitem lachem. The second pasuk talks about various gods, right? Sikut malkechem, kivun salmechem, kochav Elohechem. These are various forms of avodah zarah, of idolatry. And this pasuk, Amos is describing how Am Yisrael at this point would carry these gods, these various gods, or the representations of these gods, in processions, right, in sort of marches, right, clearly referring to Avodah Zarah that Bnei Yisrael were doing at this point. As an aside, I'll point out that we see in the background here the issue of idolatry, of Avodah Zarah. This is by far not the main focus of Amos and his prophecies, right? But it's there. You know, periodically it shows up that together with what we will see is the central focus of Amos, the Averot bin Adam l'Chavero, right? The sins that Israel were doing this time towards other people. Right? We see that also in the background there was this issue of Avodah Zarah. And the last pasuk, pasuk of Zayin, v'higleiti etchem mehala l'damesek. Amar Hashem Elohei Tzvaot Shemo. Right, and I will exile you beyond Damascus. Right, you're out of here. Right, you are going to be exiled. Right, a third idea, clearly expressing what is going to be the ultimate result of all of these sins that they are doing. Now, how are we supposed to understand these three seemingly disjointed psukim? So one possible way is to understand them as three disjointed psukim. Right, you did not bring this korban out in the desert, which, at least to this pasuk, right, is being described as a sort of idyllic, good time in the history of Am Yisrael, right? Despite the fact that in the Torah we seem to hear a lot about the problems of Am Yisrael, right? Very often in Nevi'im Achronim, other parts of the problems of Am Yisrael in the desert, in Nevi'im Achronim, very often it's dafka the idyllic aspect of their time in the Midbar that is emphasized, right? So during that time you did not bring korbanot, which was a good time, right? But now, when you are bad, when you're doing all these processions with Avodah Zarah, when you're worshiping other gods, so now you're bringing korbanot, right? So there's a problem here, right? If during that good time, korbanot were not the ikar, were not the main thing that you needed to be doing, and now when you're doing idol worship, you are bringing korbanot as a very central part of your worship. The result is that you will be sent to galut. And another way that we can understand these psukim is that the first two psukim should be read continuously. Right? Did you back then, when things were ideal, bring korbanot and turn around and then march with idols, right? Hazivachim u'mincha higashtem li b'midbar ve'im shenad Beit Yisrael unisatem et zikut malkechem ve'kivun samechem kochav elohechem asher asitem lechem. Right? Did you do the type of thing you're doing now? On the one hand, bringing korbanot and then doing chataim. Right? The rhetorical answer to that rhetorical question being, of course, no. And then there's the last idea, right? And therefore, or right, you're going to end up in galut. It's also possible the last two pesukim are supposed to be read together, right? The first pasuk being, did you bring korbanot then? Right? No. Right? Again, the answer to the rhetorical question. But now, when you do bring korbanot during this time period, you will take your idols, and you'll be marching with your idols, and you will march with them straight into galut. Right? It's kind of like making fun of these processions. Yes, keep marching with your idols. And you will keep marching and marching and marching until you're out of here, until you have gone into galut. Right? Making fun of their processions. Right? You're going to march, and you're going to march right into exile, and these gods that you are carrying, right, aren't going to carry you, right, like Hashem did once upon a time, right, rather you're going to be carrying them, right, the irony, the making fun of the idol worshippers. And there ends this prophecy, right, this prophecy, I think, has given us a good taste of what is going on with Bnei Israel at this time. One, right, that there is no justice. Right, but we've seen this here only very, very generally, right, where Amos says that you must stop what you're doing, you must stop the korbanot, etc., if justice and righteousness will prevail, will flow. Right, but we don't really know exactly what the problem is, meaning what are the injustices, what is the lack of righteousness that is going on, and that we will see very strongly in other prophecies. And we also see the emphasis here on the superficiality of their worship, right? That their worship is meaningless, and even worse, it's what brings them to become even more corrupt and do even more things which spread injustice and lack of righteousness. Next time, as we continue our study of Amos, we will look at another look at the people of the time, and get a better idea of what was wrong. What were the terrible things that they were doing that, in the prophecy that we just looked at, Amos says, the korbanot aren't going to help you, right? Your worship isn't going to help you. So stay tuned for next time as we see a closer look of Bnei Israel during the time of Amos and of Yerovam and Yoash.